Every single day I feel
the Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never know I'm best, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back to That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock on the What Are You Made Of show. Man, guys, listen, we've just been like bringing some of the greatest people on the planet here to interview, to share what they're made of, to share their journeys, to inspire you, to keep you going, to teach you that persistence is the key. And today's no different. You know, today's guest, Dr. Sandra Dalton-Smith, is in the building. She's a board-certified internal medicine physician and CEO of Restorasys. I think I pronounced that right. Workplace well-being consulting agency. She helps leaders and teams overcome employee burnout, leadership overwhelm. She's an international mind, body, spirit thought leader featured in numerous media outlets, including Fast Company, Psychology Today, CNN Health, TED.com, and now the What Are You Made Of show with C-Rock. She is the author of numerous books, including her bestseller, Sacred Rest, Recover Your Life, Renew Your Energy, Restore Your Sanity. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be here.
Yeah, man, it's great to have you. I love impact-driven people. You know, it's more than just a business type thing. We're more than just money, finances. It's about really making a difference. And, you know, I think it takes all of us to really lean into that. And there's a lot of evil in this world. There's a lot of people that don't worry about this stuff or concern themselves or take time and attention and spend it on this kind of stuff. And I just value people like yourself. So I just want to let you know that from the start.
Oh, I appreciate that. I can say the same about you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'll receive that. So on this show, we have this this whole narrative and philosophy here that, you know, sharing transparent stories helps other people because the success journey is invisible. And so we want to hear your story, but we'll get into that. But first, we got to know, what are you made of?
I am made of energy. And that's really what the problem was, the reason that I ended up on the journey that I am on, workplace well-being and burnout prevention. I thrive off of energy. And when that drops, everything hits the floor for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I mean, I've been studying quantum physics, quantum resonance, all these different things now to understand energy better and really see how, like, you know, when you go really tiny, you really get to see the breakdown of things. And you start to understand that, you know, vibes matter, emotions are contagious. And how our body actually works. And you studied this in school. I had to do it on my own. I studied it in books. And, you know, when you have this knowledge that you have with this energy thing, you really can accomplish a lot more, not just for yourself, but for other people. Right. And so when you're talking about energy and how energy, you know, how you can use the energy you're made of, where did that all start for you? Was it like, in school, in, you know, becoming a doctor, or did you have some kind of understanding of energy before, prior to that?
No, I would say I had no understanding of energy. I just knew that there were certain periods of my life when I was really on fire, when I was hitting all of the goals, everything's flowing well. It's like things are coming easy. And then there are these periods of my life when it is the exact opposite. You can't get a break no matter what you do. So it was obvious that there was something transpiring during these different situations, but it wasn't really clear what it was. And for myself, I got to a period, really it was right after I had kids. I didn't realize how much energy kids took. And I didn't have a system in place on how to restore that energy. So I was pouring out. And just, I remember one day just laying on my floor thinking, I've had it. I'm in the big house with the money and the car and the man and the kids. And I don't even have the energy to enjoy this life I felt. And I think that's really where the change happened. That's really where I had to confront what is it I'm wanting and what am I missing?
Yeah. How long ago was that?
That was about 15 years ago now.
Okay. All right. So then from that point, what actions did you take after that? Like I've done this too before. I felt like the world was on my shoulders. I just can't do this. It's like a surrender moment, isn't it?
It is. And it was hard because I'm a very driven, high achiever, I don't need rest, I don't need to stop, I got it together kind of personality. And so to get to this moment where really everything that I thought I wanted, all of what I thought success should look like, didn't feel the way I thought it should felt when I got to that moment. And for me, my background is in biochemistry. So whenever I have a problem I'd probably say if there's a second thing I'm made of, is questions and lots of them. So I had all these questions about why I felt this way. Conventional medicine wasn't answering them. Nothing was wrong with my thyroid or my adrenals or all these other things. So I started looking at other possibilities. And that's really where the whole energy conversation started for me. And then the evaluation on how do I restore this energy?
Yeah. Yeah. So, so when you like had that moment though, like what was the first actions you started taking besides like research and asking questions, like actions beyond that? What did you start to do? And where did you start to see the difference, the catalytic moment?
Yeah. I think the big catalyst to me was realizing that I didn't know everything. That probably sounds really conceited, but as a physician, I felt like I really knew the body. It's like, I know everything I should need to know, right? But I didn't. And a big part of that was just not understanding the layers of energy for myself. And so one of the very first things that I did, I think the first realization was that I had lumped all energy into it should be restored with sleeping. And I thought, if I get enough sleep, I'm just not sleeping well enough with these two, you know, two toddlers under the age of two. That's the problem. But then after getting 8 hours of sleep for weeks and still feeling exhausted, I was like, there is something else going on. So my first one was trying to get more sleep. And then when that failed, that's when all the questions opened up. What is energy? Where am I expending it? And why is it not getting restored in these moments of sleeping?
Yeah. Yeah. And what worked though? What finally worked?
You know what? When I went through this whole process, it started me really looking at the types of energy I was using. That's where the 7 types of rest came from. I started noticing, oh, I'm spending emotional energy here with dealing with patients and their diseases and cancer. I'm dealing with social energy. I'm dealing with sensory and creative. And I started looking at all of these energy buckets. For me, the one that was most depleted, the one that was actually causing my burnout, was an emotional rest deficit. I had a drain in energy emotionally because my lifestyle had, and really the practice of medicine, had trained me on how to shut my emotions down. I'm an internist, so I work inside the ICU and ER. People are dying right all around you. And so you callous a little bit. You callous your soul a little to protect yourself.
Yeah.
So that you don't become overwhelmed by all the death that you see on a regular basis. And what I didn't realize is that although I had learned how to block it in the moment, I still needed to process it. Because otherwise, it just continued to become an energy drain. It was draining me of that emotional energy that I needed.
Yeah. And then when you do that, a lot of people don't realize this, that a lot of sicknesses are caused by these problems, dis-ease. Right? Dis-ease. Like, and you know, you have stress in your life or people in your life that are causing you stress, or, you know, you could have knee pain, you could have back pain from it. And there's nothing wrong with your actual physical body. Am I right?
Oh, you're absolutely right. And that's the thing. That's not taught in medical school. Medical school, you label it, test it, treat it, street it is what we say. So there's not this deeper level of mind, body, spirit connection so that you can see some of the underlying things. It's the reason why you can have two people, completely similar situations, both take a blood pressure pill and it works for one and not the other. Well, one of them is probably also improving their stress response because they're doing some mind work and they're doing some heart work to actually get to the core of why their blood pressure is elevated. The other one's just popping a pill. And so we have to really get to that deeper level of how energy influences all of these areas.
Yeah. And so many doctors want the quick, like they just want to get it off their plate. Like you said, street them, and they just go to the drug. They go to the pharmaceutical first.
And it's easier
only sometimes, right?
It's easier. I hate to, you stated this in the very beginning, you know, when we get down to it, sometimes when you're looking at that big picture, it boils down to the money. And so for some physicians, in order to, especially depending on if they are in a practice where they have more control, or if they're an employee of a hospital or a large HMO type organization, it sometimes comes down to how many patients you can turn out, how quickly. It's no different than a conveyor belt. It just has lives on it and not machines. And so when we start looking at it that way, you can see why the healthcare system has these issues that it has right now, because there isn't time for education. There isn't time for the needed extra level of treatment that goes into lifestyle, that goes into mindset and habits and those things that really do improve overall healthcare and well-being.
Yeah. See, the funny thing here is that you get into the medical field, the healthcare field, to help people have better lives, heal sickness, heal injuries, live longer, save lives. And then you have this thing where the money comes into it. And then it's like, well, I don't really have the appreciation for life that I say I do. So there's a pulling thing. And then the other thing is, look, I know big pharma, there's some good to it. There's some things but there's a conflict of interest. There's a conflict of interest. What are your thoughts on that? And how do you go about your business and day to day with this conflict of interest? By the way, also for anything that is preventative care versus post care, I mean, a lot of that's not promoted as much as the pharmaceutical drugs are.
Oh, absolutely not.
Or shut down.
Exactly. Absolutely not. And you're right. It comes down to business as what the and money for the overall reason this is such an issue. And I feel like there are a lot of physicians that are trying to make some of these changes within their practice. But honestly, the only way to truly do that is to be a physician's own practice or have a hospital that is bent towards truly helping people above all else. And that's rare. Is the reason why quite a few of them close up, because when they try to do that, it gets kind of out of hand. My take on that is this. I think each physician has to be able to live with themselves and how they practice medicine. And so for myself, what I ended up having to do was I broke my practice down into segments. I cut back. I'm in a physician-owned practice. So 10 physicians, it's our money that goes into it. We're all part partners. So we have our own ownership. And I had a talk with my husband one day and I said, look, I don't want to see more than, I think it was 15 patients at the time per day, because that's the number of people that I can adequately treat and really feel like I'm helping. And I also talk with my patients and let them know, look, I can't see you for every sniffle and sneeze. I have a nurse practitioner that can help you with some of these lesser things, but I want to see you twice a year for overall health maintenance. That is what internal medicine really is meant to do. Not every sniffle that you get, because half the things can be treated just by increasing your consumption of antioxidant vegetables and fruits. So just getting them more aware of some of these things that they can do, rather than let me just get an antibiotic for a quick fix. And once I started making these shifts, it really helped me to see what I'm doing now, the work that I do within corporations to help them with getting their employees and their internal talent physically, mentally, emotionally, and wellness related stronger, because it all comes down to the education, and not just the knowledge, but the application of it. Because there's plenty of knowledge out there. Anyone can go online and learn about any disease known to man, even the rare ones, as you know, that no one ever gets. And that's fantastic. I love the level of information that's provided. It's the application to the information. That is the thing most people are missing. And the application has to be simple enough that you don't feel like, for an example, with what I teach regarding rest and restorative practices, half the battle is getting people to detach from the thought of that, meaning they have to take a vacation. They have to go on a 5-week sabbatical in Tibet somewhere and stare at grass, and really get them to understand that it is way simpler than that. You can have restorative practices built into the busiest life and not have to increase any of your time or energy to do it.
Yeah, I agree with that, man. And, you know, how do you, as a physician, but also an influencer now, you know, I would consider you an influencer out there, a thought leader. You put in the bio actually too. So with that being the case, how do you guard yourself against indoctrination by those that have evil intention? Maybe it's just all about money or what have you, but also misleading people in the healthcare industry on what works, what doesn't. And, you know, I got a lot of things that come to mind with this, like different specifics, but how do you guard against that from indoctrination?
Well, I think you have to have your own values and know what you stand for. You know, it's very easy to have people sway you if you don't stand for something. So when you put your stake in the ground, make sure that you know what you're standing for. I think that's probably the first rule of that. Make sure you know what you're standing for, and that is something that you can hold on to. And then once you put your stake in the ground, stand there. You know, I think there's a whole lot of fluidity that people kind of adopt. And so when you are not stable in what you believe, you can be swayed very easily. Once you have determined that this is what I stand for, this is what I believe, then it gives you some parameters on what to say yes to, what to say no to, what you attach yourself to, and what you push yourself back from. And, you know, we talk about energy, but I feel like that energy is part of it. I'm always, you know, aware that my message and the way I present it repels some people. And I am way okay with that because they're not people I want to be attached to. And I also recognize that the energy that I have attracts certain people. And those are the people that I want to do work in business with.
Yeah. Yeah. Has there been a time where you know, some medicine came out or whatever the case was, and it seemed like, man, this just doesn't seem right. And they kept pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And then you either went with it for a little while, let me see, and then had to backtrack. Like, has that ever happened from, there's a conflict. I can't keep saying this. There's a conflict of interest out there. Like, have you been in that situation?
I have. And I don't want to name any specific drug.
Yeah. That's why I didn't.
Yeah. Cause there's attorneys and people everywhere. So, you learn that quickly too.
Yeah.
So what I will say is this, because what I talk about is related to sleep, and I always say sleep and rest are not the same thing, but it automatically draws people into the conversation of sleep because I'm kind of pushing back against sleep being the end all be all. I have to admit that when I first started medicine, one of the number one things people complain about is insomnia. Nobody can sleep, it seems, to pass 5 hours without popping a pill when I first started medicine. Everybody was coming in asking for the number one sleep aid at the time, which I will not name, but everybody was on it. And it was one of those things where people would come in and specifically say, I want that drug. And, you know, for a while, I'm like, okay, it looks safe enough, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'd write a prescription and we'd have conversations about other ways of sleeping. Then I started hearing and seeing people come in with all of these side effects. I lost 4 hours in the middle of the night and I don't know what happened. My husband said I did got up and went and did who knows what.
Wow.
You know, and I'm like, that's not normal. You know, there's nothing normal about that. And it didn't start until after you started taking the sleep aid. It's like, no, I don't. And you try to take the drug away from them and it's not supposed to be addictive. But in taking it away from them, then they really can't sleep. It's almost as if you poured gasoline on a fire. It's like you took a bad situation and made it worse because of whatever the chemicals that got shifted around in the brain initially with that drug, you know, within a couple of weeks of taking it, took months to get them back to even a remotely normal sleep cycle. And that was disturbing.
How does it work when you're a physician? Are you, do you have like a reporting channel that you can report these side effects to so they're aware of it?
You do. There are ways that you can start reporting them. Now, on my end, because if I live close enough to a major city, specifically close enough to Atlanta, to a major city where we had drug reps coming in all the time. So we were always in front of the people who were pushing it. And so we were always able to report directly back to them like, hey, what's up? What's going on? You know, I tried whatever it is and I'm noticing this, that, or the other. You know, what are you hearing? Some of them would be very upfront with you. Well, yes, we have studies to evaluate whether or not that's something we're hearing occasionally. Usually they'd kind of make light of it, but they would be upfront with you that that's something that was under evaluation or further down the pipeline. With some of the clinical trials. Others were, well, they were salesmen. They were, you know, it would be belittled off and kind of gone on as if nothing ever happened. And so it was one of those opportunities to really decide with each drug whether or not it was something you wanted to continue in your arsenal or if it was something that you personally decided you weren't going to give anymore, regardless of what anybody else was doing.
Right. Right. Well, thank you for sharing that part. Appreciate that. And now in your bio, you talk about mind, body, spirit. So the spirit part, I want to talk about this. Are you a spiritual person? And have you seen in your studies and your asking questions, the spiritual link to science? Like what I've been doing and studying is they're not separate things. A lot of people try to keep them separate. You're either a spiritual person or you're a science, you know, science believer. There is such a connection there. Have you seen that too? And what's your experience?
Yes, that is actually my stake in the ground. So I love that you bring that up. You know, in my work, the seven types of rest framework includes physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, social, sensory, and creative. And so I can't tell you how many times I've been asked to not share the spiritual. And it's odd because they know that is the framework. There's seven pieces to it. I'll even share this, is that when I initially got asked by TEDx to do a talk, to do their opening talk for it in Atlanta, initially they said, oh, we're not a spiritual organization. You know, don't share that number seven. That's not part of kind of what we do here. And the day, or like a couple of days before I was about to get on the stage, we were reviewing everything. And it's like, you said there's seven and you show this graphic, but then you only give us six. And they're like, well, I think you have to give the seventh one, you know, because it doesn't even make sense for you not to. And I get why they did that, because I have a specific spiritual background. And so I share from the authenticity of that spiritual background, mm-hmm. but I also work with organizations around the world who don't agree as I agree. And so I recognize that you don't, even if you don't adhere to the specific faith base that I do, can we get on at least an even plane that spirituality exists?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you, and it's interesting because one of the interviews I did was with a gentleman who just very abruptly said, I'm an atheist. I don't even believe in God. I said, I didn't ask if you believed in God. Do you believe there's a spiritual realm? That has nothing to do with the fact that we are even talking about God means you believe there's a spiritual realm to some degree. And so as we talked about that, what I share on spirituality is that spirituality really boils down to belonging, acceptance, purpose. It's what binds humanity together. It's this sense of human spirit among us that keeps us kind of bound together. And when we look at science, it is impossible to subtract a physical being from the spirituality of that being, because it's all part. It's like taking an egg and saying, hey, I like the yolk and the shell, but I don't want the white part of it. You can't separate them. They're all part of the same.
Yep. Yeah. Here's the other thing, without the spirit, right? Which is like kind of like the life, right? You just be matter, and you could possibly move and have some reaction and some synapses going on, which makes you move your body reactions and all that. But maybe it's just that we need to understand that we're describing something, which is the life, the personality, whatever, and we just call it spirit, and you can call it whatever you want, but you're not. That person's not an atheist or doesn't believe in a spiritual. They call it something different, because you can't deny that this, like, C-Rock is C-Rock. You know, Dr. Sandra is Dr. Sandra. So, you know, maybe that's just a misunderstanding, a miscommunication. But why do you think people try to shut that down so much? Like, is it because they're scared of it, or they're worried about offending people, or what is it?
Well, I think there is a huge fear of offense in our country. There is a huge fear of offense. It's hard. And I think that's why people have a hard time taking a stand for anything, because if you say you agree with one political party and one person agrees with another, it's like, I can't like you. It's like, what? That's stupid. It's like, I can like you and disagree with you. It's like, we don't have to be, you know, twins where we everything exactly the same. And I think it's the same with spirituality. I can love you, appreciate your gifts, your talents, acknowledge you for who you are, celebrate what you're doing in the world, and not 100% agree with everything about you.
Right.
You know, that's not necessary to actually love and be a good human. And so I think we just have to become less offendable in how we approach each other and approach life. And when we do that, we give people the grace to be able to experience spirituality at whatever level. Even my friends who are atheists and say, I don't believe in your God, and, you know, I don't like all those posts you do about the God stuff. Even them, as we talk about being unoffendable, and they see, I don't get offended when you say that. I still want to go hang out with you and do whatever we're doing. It's interesting, because then they say things like, well, you're not really like everybody else. And it's like, okay, I'm not even going to try to explain that to you, because then I'm going to have to talk that spiritual stuff that you don't want to hear about.
Yep. That's so true. It really is. You know, like as we dive deeper into this, there's power in not taking things personal. If you decide, and it, by the way, this only takes a decision. It's this simple. You decide, I will not be offended by anything. I will never take something personal. You just decide that, and the rest of your life from that point, which is all of our lives is based on decisions anyway. Some people just don't realize that's what's shaping their future. But if we just decide that, there's power in that. So it's not promoted on the media and through government to not take offense to things. They don't promote that because it would give people, individuals, power. That power would lessen those people's control.
That's so true. Yeah. And that's driven so much of our world right now, the power we have yielded to others in our quickness to take offense. You know, I think sometimes we have to get to a place where we don't have such an attachment to what we hear other people say that we take offense, so that it becomes something that's downing us or shaming us or making us feel unworthy or making us feel less than or belittled. I mean, you choose how you feel with that. You know, if someone says something derogatory to me, it's just a word. It really only has power that I allow it to take in my mind. You know, a friend, and I don't know who says this quote, but a friend of mine recently shared a quote with me that said something like, your mind is traffic control, air traffic control. You get to control what takes off and what lands. And I thought to myself, how powerful of a thought is that, especially living near Atlanta, Hartsfield, which is like the busiest area in America, things going off and dropping all the time, right? And so when I think about that, how often does someone say something and you can either take it to heart, have it ruin your day, shut you down where, oh, I'm not going to post on social media, or I'm not going to speak up, or I'm not going to try to write a book or start a podcast or start a business or start a nonprofit because someone's words have shut you down. I mean, we have to get a little bit stronger than that and make a decision that I am called to something. I have a purpose for something. I have a passion for something. This is what I believe I'm to do, and take a stand and go for it.
Yeah. Look, here's the cure for a lot of health, finance, political, everything in this country. Unconditional love and not taking offense to anything. Those two things right there, if you figure those two things out, you're one of the most powerful beings on the planet. And so we need to promote that more. I'm going to start doing some more social posts on that because that's power. And we're all programmed not to be that way because then it makes us too powerful. So anyway, next thing I want to move to as we wind this down here. Okay. And this is something that has been very powerful to me. And that is the art of podcasting. And I want to hear about your journey with podcasting. I know you have a show, you go on shows, you've been interviewed all different places. I assume on television as well. What has been your journey with being interviewed and having your own podcast, and what has it done for you?
I would say, you know, it's interesting because when I first started speaking out, I would say kind of coming out of my shell, I came out with the thought process of, hey, I have this idea. I want to tell people about how to rest and be restored and get back on track. I'm going to write a book. And in my head, I'm thinking writing a book means I don't have to talk to anybody. I can put it on paper, put it out there. If you want to read it, you read it. And I don't have to say anything. I didn't realize, however, that, you know, publishers, that's not how they work. They actually start putting you in front of people. And so when I started getting interviews initially, it was so much about how I was being portrayed that it sucked the life right out of the interviews. It's like I was so concerned about, am I saying it right? Am I covering all the bases? Am I making sure to give so many, you know, quick points and tips? Am I making sure I say the book so many times and all of these different things that it had no energy. It had none of me and a whole lot of marketing, a whole lot of other stuff that comes across wrong. And so for me, it was a process of learning and really listening back to some of those first interviews and seeing, you know what, that's not me. And I'm going to show up for myself. Whether they like me or don't like me, I'm going to be me. And that means if I flub the words, if I forget what I'm going to say, if I come off rude or excitable or whatever it is, I'm going to be real. I'm going to be who I am. So that at each interview, when I step away from the mic, I feel like I literally drop the mic in my spirit. Like I said what I had to say, no matter what anybody thought. And that is when I started getting invites for other interviews. And that's when I started enjoying the process of interviews and started wanting to actually be on the other side of it, interviewing other people. And, you know, it's interesting because on my podcast, when I'm interviewing someone, if I feel them holding back and doing all of that perfectionistic interviewee stuff, I will stop the interview right there and say, who are you trying to impress? Can we have a conversation here?
Just
be real with each other. Because I'm not putting that out there. That's like, oh, no, that's like death to the microphone. I want to hear real people being real and just enjoying the process.
I love you. You're awesome. I just want to let you know that. And, you know, we got to get off this thing where we need a license to do something. We're looking for someone to grant us a license, and people that aren't even in a department or an agency, and we're looking for them to give us a license to be ourselves. That's crazy. That's
it
crazy.
Is.
You know,
it really
and, that,
is.
And that's why, like, I started this brand, That One, because I believe that everybody is That One, and they need to just step into that. And I'm going to continue to be a maniac about it and promote and talk about the fact that you need to be That One, lean into it. So, Dr. Sandra Dalton Smith, I want to thank you for being here today. You're awesome. Where can people find you or go deeper with you? Where do you want to send them?
Yes, they can check out my podcast at ichoosemybestlife.com or connect with me at drdaltonsmith.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Go check her out, guys. Thank you so much for being here, doctor.
It's been my pleasure.
All right. Hang tight while I wrap this up. Listener, I appreciate you. I really, it means the world to me to be able to do this show and have you learn or take something from it or just participate in some way. And I just want to let you know to please share this with your coworkers. Let them know about this show, your friends, your family. If you get value from the show, you know, we're trying to make sure you understand that you're unstoppable to live in the life of your dream, and we'll continue to do that. And until next time, it's your boy C-Rock with the wonderful Dr. Sandra Dalton Smith in the building on the What Are You Made Of show, live from That One Studio. Until next time, beat that one.
Music licensing reimagined.